Dirty Books.
Hello and welcome to We're Reading Dirty Books. This is Kalina.
And this is Saylet.
And welcome to our podcast where we read and discuss supernatural romance novels.
Welcome back.
Hi.
So, how are you?
I'm good. I'm a bit tired and jet-lagged. I just got back from my vacation to London.
Nice.
It was lovely. The weather was really nice. It was cool and overcast, but not, you know, it didn't rain on us all the time. And it was snowing here, so I escaped that.
Did. We got our first snow of the season, and pretty much everybody, well, I won't say everybody. I'll just say all the transplants went a little nuts, but... It was good. It wasn't too... It was a wet snow.
Those early ones in early October tend to be that way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it was a lovely trip. Everything was great. And now I'm just tired. I came back and it is hard. Like, it's easy going there, I think, because you're so excited for a trip that you just, like, it doesn't matter. You kind of plow through being tired and you go and you, you know, sightsee all day and you walk around and do mm-hmm. everything you want to do, which makes you additionally tired. And then also the hours difference. When you come back, you're just like, everything hits you all at once.
Yep.
You're like, oh.
And you dread coming back to work and getting into the routine of things. And
fixing everything that everyone broke while you were gone. Because they can't do basic shit.
That's what happens when you sit in the big chair.
It's not that big.
No, it's not.
It's a half big chair. Should be a lot bigger considering, but it's not.
Some pretty big shoes to fill if you ever decided to.
You'd think people could put bills in the mail, but no, apparently that was too much to ask of all of my coworkers. it's frustrating. So, but anyway, so that's that. Yeah.
Yeah.
London was great. It was wonderful.
That's awesome. I'm going to be going to DC next week.
Yeah. It's a work trip.
It is a work trip. We're doing a work retreat. They're actually calling it an all hands meeting, which I think is pretty cool. I work with two other people here in my office. So the rest of the people are in the different states, 8 or 9 different states. So we'll get to finally meet people face to face. But I am more excited about going to DC. I've never been to DC before.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That should be exciting, you know. I was about to say, I'm trying not to say anything, but I'm going to say, it's like, it'd be a lot more pleasant if a certain administration wasn't currently occupying it, but...
I saw the hesitation in your face and totally got what you were going to
go. If only.
I'm just going to put that blinder on and just go enjoy our nation's capital. And
he'll be there for a week and he'll be out golfing.
That's true.
He won't even have to be there.
Doesn't even matter.
Won't matter.
That's very true. So we just got done listening to our next novel. What was it called?
Darkness Dawns, Immortal Guardians by Diane Duval. And it was narrated by Kirsten Potter. So that was it. I hope everyone either joined along and read it with us, or you're just here to find out if it's a book you should read. One or the other.
Which...
Really, because those are your two options. Did you read it or did you not? If you find a third option, let me know what that one is.
Which one was that?
Sorry.
No, it makes sense. So you want to give us a little bit of...
Okay.
Of a...
Brief rundown. Mm-hmm. So, Darkness Dawns is about Sarah and Roland.
Yes. We had a Sarah in the previous
book. We did.
Book.
Okay. Because, yes. Or like, I felt like Sarah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We've had two
Sarah steps. And Roland. Mm-hmm. Sarah is a music professor, I think. It doesn't really matter.
Music
She's not that for very long. but she lives in, it's like, takes place in Carolina, one of them. Oh, North?
I think it's North.
North Carolina. I don't remember. They don't talk about it all that much. But anyway, she's out digging up her garden one night and... basically gets, like, run over and meets Roland, who is an immortal guardian. And we find out that in this world, there are vampires and immortal guards. And they both stem from the same virus, but it takes two different paths. If a regular human is infected with the virus, they become a vampire and eventually devolve into madness and bloodlust and your typical vampire behavior, your typical, like, traditional vampire lore behavior, where you're just uncontrollable killing machine who feeds and craves blood. Or if you're a special person, who has a particularly, like, special talent. I forget, like, they don't really have a good name for them.
Some special, they call them special.
Talented. Special abilities. Or, yeah, like, blessed or something, whatever. And you are infected with the virus. It is mutated by your body, and you don't become crazy bloodlusty. You just become immortal. You do also have to ingest blood, but not to a crazy extent. It just helps you heal, like, when you're injured and stuff. So those are the two paths. One is good, one is bad. Basically, the Immortal Guardians try to protect humans and innocent people from the vampires. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the role they've taken on. Sarah meets Roland. There's this vampire trying to kill him. He starts trying to kill Sarah, too. Well, maybe a lot of people try to get killed and try not to get killed, mm-hmm. and a lot of that happens. There's a lot of fighting. Sarah and Roland develop strong emotional attachment to each other, end up becoming, like, physically intimate. They track down the guy who's basically spent the whole book trying to kill Roland, uh-huh. and they, turns out he's, spoiler alert, either you've either read it or you haven't, but here you go. He's not really a vampire. He thinks he is. He's an immortal guardian, but he didn't find out, and so he was raised to believe he was a vampire and that the immortal guardians are the bad guys who kill innocents, and so he's trying to stop them. And then as a side note, the head, like the oldest immortal guardian, Seth, and his, like, the second oldest, David, have this little mission where they're trying to find, something's wrong in Houston. There's this feeling that's bumming out all the vampires and bumming out all the immortal guardians in Houston. They track it down, and it's a woman screaming telepathically for help for, like, weeks and weeks, and they save her and rehabilitate her, and she's just kind of a side story. We don't really know her background. We end the book without ever figuring that out. Right. But by the end, Sarah and Roland are together. She has been successfully transitioned into an immortal. Huh. She turns out she was a special person too. She uh-huh. had a gift, and now the two of them are married and in love. La! And we have a whole, like, this is a series, so there's a lot more books in this series if you're interested.
Yeah, and this one was a really good one. I know we say that about most of the ones that we read, but it's really funny because Kalina hadn't started this book yet, and I advised her not to start it on the airplane because she will get squirmy. And she pretty much got squirmy. When she was, I was definitely on edge I listened to this whole thing. This one was a shorter one too, which was
It's a shorter nice, book,
but
it's a really good book.
Yeah.
we do say that a lot, but this is true.
We do. We've liked them all, but it's, I don't know. I think we're going to have something positive to say about every book until we start talking about it, really. But
yeah, no book is perfect. There's mm-hmm. definitely pros and cons in most books. Some of them have more. I think we found a lot more cons in the last book than we even realized when we started talking.
That's true, because we started off with, we liked this book. It was good writing. And then in the end, it just turned out that we liked the story in the book.
And we hated
Vlad. Vlad was just a fucking abusive
asshole. So vampire. We can luckily say that's not the case here. Roland's a really good guy. Yes. He catches a lot of heat from his fellow immortals because he's a reclusive, loner, silent, antisocial type. But I think that's evident from that it's really just the result of his past experiences. Yeah. He's trying to protect himself. Because mm-hmm. as soon as he meets Sarah, he becomes kind of different.
Yeah.
No, I think this book is chock-a-block with sex scenes and lovely, just intensely erotic pieces.
Yeah.
That, you know, a lot of the other books we've read have like two or three. This is, I lost count.
And the ones in the books that we've read, they were just like little snippets or little teasers or anything mm-hmm. like this. And the teasers are inside of this book as well. But there are multiple scenes of like action happening.
Yes.
Of actual, and it's all, you know... Roland and Sarah get it on. I think one of my favorite scenes, and they hadn't had sex yet, because they just met.
It's another story of two people meet, and 24 hours later, they're like mated for life.
Two people meet. The woman is instantly attracted. He's instantly attracted, but he's got this past where he's got this blinder up, and he's just, you know, it's just a typical story. But the characters are so endearing, and they're so sweet. My favorite scene, well, one of my favorite scenes, I liked a lot of scenes in this book, but this one wasn't sexual. actual, not really, it was definitely a teaser, was so Sarah rescues Roland and he's like naked in the woods.
Yeah.
She has to take him back to the house because he can't be in the sunlight because he's an immortal.
Yeah, they have the vampire aversion to sun thing.
Yeah. And so he, you know, he calls his friends for help. So his friend is going to come and help him, his friend Marcus, and they're waiting for him. And they end up, they're watching TV, but they end up falling asleep on the couch together. Mm. And he wakes up and she's asleep on top of him. And I was just like, oh my God, that is so adorable. It was so cute. And I don't know why, but I just fell instantly in love with that whole scene.
Yeah.
And so like, and he was just like, wait for it. And he was very like, he let her dominate that situation because it did take her a couple of minutes to realize that she'd fallen asleep on him. That
he freaked out for a second because he thought he might have bit her.
That's true. He did think that he...
Because he couldn't wake her.
Right.
She's apparently that heavy of a sleeper.
Yeah.
Which I am the like worst sleeper. I don't sleep at all. So I was instantly jealous because the idea of being asleep on another human being and actually being asleep mm-hmm. and not being like, this is uncomfortable and I don't want to be here any longer. But I was like, oh, she really fell asleep and she didn't like he couldn't even wake her. I was like, that's impossible because literally like a leaf falls and I'm like, what?
I know, right? Huh?
What, somebody say something? Do I need to get up? Is there danger? So no, that was a very cute scene.
I love that scene
because he was already like, yeah, he was talking about like this just was so unusual and out of his comfort zone. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. he'd put himself, you know, he was completely at her mercy because mm-hmm. he was staked to the ground naked about, like, at almost sunrise. Mm-hmm. And, like, she saved him from that. So that was amazing. And then she brought him back to her house and took care of him. And he had no clothes and he was wounded. And he couldn't tell her that he was a vampire. So
yep.
he just pretended to be a CIA agent,
yep.
which is a terrible fucking lie.
Yep.
Yep. No one came to get him right away. It was so dumb. But
it
anyway.
But it worked. I mean, she was skeptic about it. But thank God Seth, the lead vampire, or the lead immortal, can read minds.
Yeah.
He's got all of the powers, so he went that way. And even he was just like, really?
Really? Everyone gave him a bunch of shit for that. Like, you can't just say you're CIA.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You have to let them infer that you're CIA.
Right, and you're doing an undercover, what, you just told me everything? You're
also, CIA. Like, yeah, like a drug dealer. I'm like, that's not the CIA, bud. One, they don't offer...
Did he say drugs? I thought he did weapons.
Oh, weapons.
I can't
still,
remember.
Still not the
CIA. That's true. It's still not the CIA.
That's like the DEA or the FBI. Because you don't operate on American soil if you're the CIA. You're only supposed to operate abroad. Anyway, I don't know if that's true anymore.
well,
I think our current
government. But he does have an accent.
He is British.
So.
Which is another reason he probably is not CIA.
Right.
No, I mean, I think they have foreign contractors, but it's still funny.
Aside the point.
It's outside, whatever. No, it's a good book. It's a fun book. The characters are lovely.
Mm-hmm.
I have one small bone to pick with Sarah. It wouldn't be a true review if I didn't find a problem with somebody.
That's true.
You know?
Kenna was like,
You can't. For the most part, I think she was a great character. She was incredibly strong. She already knew how to, like, shoot and, like, just because she wanted to protect herself. Mm-hmm. She knew some skills. He taught her to fight a little bit more. I mean, she was brave from the get-go. You know, she really stood up for herself. She did a lot of great things. She had one small particular habit that was super frustrating to me. She's apparently incredibly conscious about what she eats.
Yeah.
So she only eats organic, all natural, no red meat, only a little bit of, like, soy ice cream. Fuck you. Fuck it. I'm like, that's fine. Like, if that's what you want to eat, that's fine. She was preachy about it, which is where I draw the line into
yes.
You're irritating.
Yes.
And actually, I don't even blame Sarah for it. I blame Diane, the author, because I have a sneaking suspicion that this is the way Diane is.
Probably.
And she wrote her character this way, mm-hmm. and I was like, it's fine to eat organic and healthy. It's not okay to be preachy and annoying about it. No one likes that guy. No one likes that guy.
I feel that same way about religion.
Yeah. Be whatever religion you want to be. Don't fucking tell me about it.
Believe whatever you want. Just don't make me feel like a bad guy.
No.
For not
don't
being
try
a bad
to tell
guy.
Me about it. Yeah. I don't want to fucking hear about your religion, and I want to go eat some fucking french fries, so shut up. Like, I'll eat healthy when I can, and when I don't feel like it anymore, I'm going to have a hamburger. So she was really defensive, like, from the beginning about her, the way she eats. And then it turned out, luckily, that Roland eats the same way. There was some weird explanation about if they eat processed foods, the virus gets worse. They don't eat meat. I don't know. Whatever. Yeah. Again, I was
These are very particular types of immortals. I had to get used to calling them and thinking them out as immortals because I'm like, they're fucking vampires.
They're vampires.
But the difference is...
They don't live on blood. They do eat regular food.
Yeah.
They just need blood occasionally to top up, like, their blood reserves or something. I don't know. And they don't really eat it, apparently, either. Their fangs suction it into their bloodstream.
Yeah, their fangs have holes.
Yeah. They're like needles. So
they're like straws.
Fangs are straws right into veins,
and
apparently.
Then, so they don't, they don't get...
They don't really drink it. I don't know. It was an interesting choice.
It was.
I actually liked
it. I was just like, that's pretty cool.
I was like, we're getting so nitpicky, different. I think. No, I think at that point she was, because she'd already kind of walked herself into the corner of not liking processed foods red meats and blood meats and all of these things. And I was like, oh, so how are you going to explain away the blood? Oh, we don't really drink it. I'm like, interesting choices. Okay. That gets around this. I see how you are.
Yeah. Well, she lives by it. She praises it and she just... It seems like she makes other people feel bad about it. But, you know, you take it for what it is.
It is. But that was really, in the grand scheme of things, it only came up kind of towards the beginning.
Yeah, when they were eating pizza.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she brought it up a lot. But it's, you know, I just don't like people who talk too much about their own personal eating choices. So that was one nitpicky thing I had. And then my other thing came up also in the beginning. Most of this book was just great.
Yeah.
And then there were two specific times where my feminist hackles rose and I was like, and I got really, like, because it was a beautifully told story. And then all of a sudden there's these two discordant notes that happen. And it happened early on when describing the two main characters. So in the first one, we're in Roland's voice, because this book transitions between narrators, basically. Mm-hmm. It's Roland, it's Sarah, it's Seth, it's any of them. But we're in Roland's voice, and he's describing Sarah, and he's talking about, like, the fullness of her hips and the roundness of her breasts and her ass. Not like those stick-thin models or those Hollywood movie types.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that kind of comparison and body shaming of a different type of body style is unnecessary. He may favor a certain type of body style, which is completely normal. I mean, everyone has, a type, or they tend to gravitate towards a body type that they like, that they find the most attractive. But there's no need as a writer to put that in stark contrast to another existing body type.
Right.
Like those the models and Hollywood types that you're talking about don't need to be brought into that discussion. You can describe Sarah in all the terms you want to without making a comparison to another body type.
A negative comparison.
A negative one. Mm-hmm. So it's just unnecessary. And then thankfully, though, to make it equal out to the sexes, she also did it when Sarah was describing Roland. Describing his muscle form and his perfect chiseled body. Not like, you know, the men she typically sees who don't even lift a weight.
Yeah.
You know? It's just one of those things, like, don't.
Typical human.
Which is the rest of us. I just want to speak out. Maybe we can kind of encourage a turn for all of these authors to kind of be a little bit more cognizant that this slips in occasionally, and you don't need to do it. There's just no need to body shame anyone else when you're describing your characters.
Right.
You can just flat describe them. We're going to get it. We're going to understand when you say she has full round hips that she's not stick thin.
Right.
You know, those are two different things. We'll get it. We'll get there without needing to shame any other type of body. So those were my things that stuck out and I wanted to bring up. As
I think those are good. I think they're important. I think it's good for us to send out a message of love. We want to be able to love all different types of people.
Yeah.
And I mean, from the pictures that we posted on our social media, and for one, you won't really even be able to see our faces because we're hidden behind a bunch of Snapchat filters.
Yeah.
But that's not because
we're basic bitches, guys.
Exactly. We're just living out what it is to be a 21-year-old right now at 34.
Sure.
But,
sure.
You know, we are definitely not the epitome of what I think people would call beauty.
Oh.
I mean, you know,
I think we're both very beautiful.
Oh, though. I think that we are. But, maybe
we are not ideal tall. Body type.
That's it. Maybe that's what I meant to
We're
say.
We're both short and We're... maybe slightly plumpy, or in my case, slightly, like a lot more plumpy.
And people have their different opinions of what their ideal body type and everything should be.
That's true. That's you know true. What I mean? There isn't one ideal. I didn't. Yeah. Even I just slipped into that. So yeah, see, it's hard.
Well, but so did I. Just a second ago.
It's important, I think, to continue to have this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
For too long, it's been too easy to set up people against each other and body shame and, like, here's what everyone should look like. Mm-hmm. I think in this climate, it's becoming a lot more, like, it's being talked about a lot more. Feminism is really having a resurgence also, like, everyone hates it. But, you know, it's having its day because it's really coming to the forefront that, you know, shit is still wrong. We're not being treated well still. Yeah. And it's time that this end. It's been fucking millennia.
Yeah.
I just, So whenever, like, I love these books. I love these books. But I definitely reading them from a different prism now than I have ever done in the past. Like, just reading them for pure my own enjoyment, I probably would have skipped over stuff like that. It might have struck a little bit, but it wouldn't have been as important. But now that I'm reading them with the purpose of then discussing them and bringing my own opinions and thoughts to the world about these books, I find it incredibly important to point out things that are kind of flaws. If we continue to do this, it's not that I think Diane's a bad writer or anything. I think she's a good writer. I really love the rest of this book, but that's, you know, those were like two or three sentences you cut out of this book and
it would
you know,
have been
I would, yeah,
the same.
Same fucking book. Yeah, same, like, you aren't losing same content book. At all. You're just not drawing, like, highlights towards comparison of body.
Yeah, because you picture a woman the way that you describe it and then you put her next to the person that you're describing her against doesn't make her any more beautiful. It doesn't make her any more pretty or attractive. It just makes her and them and them, but they are in the negative light and she's in the positive light, whereas she could have just been in the light. And that's all we needed.
That's all we needed. Just pure description. So, so those were... But
those are good
aside
pointers.
From that, unlike in the last book where we had real problems with some masculine issues. This one, there aren't. The guys are really wonderful. Like, Seth.
I'm in love with Seth. I think I'm going to marry him. He's my favorite. My absolute most... Sorry.
No, it's... No, I...
Continue on with...
He's not in the book enough for me to decide he's probably my favorite. I think I'll like him a lot. He's definitely probably going to come to the fore in other books in this series, I would imagine. It's still a little early, but he's awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got all of the powers of the immortals. He's got a bunch. So, I don't know if I said it in the intro, but basically, like, when these people are born with power, like, Roland was born with the ability to heal. Even as a human, he could heal with touch. And so he was born 900 years ago. It was scary. People wanted to burn him as a witch or whatever. Like, you had to hide stuff like that. Even today, people don't really believe it if you're like a prophetic seer or see ghosts or stuff like that. But all of the ones who turn into immortals have some kind of gift, whether it is healing, teleportation, Marcus sees ghosts, stuff like that. And Seth has, like, all of them. He's, like, telepathic.
He can fly, he can apparate, he can read minds, he can... Yep.
Yeah, he's got them all, so he's extra cool that way. But he's so kind to... they go and rescue this woman. You know, he's just the way he is with her. He's just protective and kind and just lets her... Like, he's brought her to his castle and just, like, lets her wander because he doesn't know how to make her feel safe. You know, she doesn't seem to be understanding that he's trying to, like, look, you're safe here. Yeah. Or you're not going to be hurt anymore. Because she was being tortured and horrible things. And so he just, like, lets her... Like, she ends up sitting in the living room watching one of his friends play video game, like Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
And she's, like, jumping at it and getting into it. Yeah. I thought that was endearing.
She doesn't
that was
even
so
talk
cute.
At that point.
No.
And she just, like, points at the screen and, like, oh my god, it was one of the cuter scenes.
It was really cute.
I freaking love that scene.
I really liked it. And there's nothing sexual about him at all in this book. It was just his character. All of the sexual tension is between the two main characters, Roland and Sarah.
Yeah, that's all.
Which are great, but anytime that she flashed to a different narrative and talked about Seth, I got super excited. At first, I was like, I don't know if I like this guy, because he's the leader of these guys, because he is the oldest and he's the strongest, but he is very protective of his men, and, you know, they protect the human race and things. At first, I thought he was just going to be another big boss guy that tells everybody what to do and everything, but he ends up stealing me away, pretty much, and so I'm all about Seth. One thing I wanted to bring up was, And I know this is a pretty typical name, but the name Sarah. We've read two books now that have the name Sarah. And from one of them, I don't know if this is the meaning for it just in general, but the name means princess. And I don't think that this Sarah really lives up to it. I don't think the other Sarah did either. I don't know why, but it really brought me a little bit more into this book because Sarah is my alter ego.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
So, like, I really stepped into these books when their names and coincidentally, my two favorite books.
Yeah, that's true.
The main character.
This one and the dragon one.
Mm-hmm. The main character females were named Sarah. And Sarah is is the name that I would use at Starbucks. Or
noodles, or anytime they ask for your name, you say you're Sarah.
Yeah, and then they always say, with an H, I'll say no without an H. Or they'll say, without an H, I'll say no with an H. Because my name is not Sarah at all, so I just like to play around with it.
Just tell them.
Yep. Otherwise, I'd get questions like, oh, how do you spell that? Where are you from? What does it mean? And I'm like, my name is Sarah.
Which is so funny because I take the 100% opposite path of I just straight tell them my name and then look at them. Like, are you going to ask how to spell that? And 90% of the time, they will not. So they'll just be like, we're going to make that shit up. Every once in a while, someone will wait until they have my card, and then I can tell, and then I can see them, like, read the card and spell it that way. That is the only ones that get it right.
That's a genius way to do that.
But mostly, I just am like, I don't know why it's fun to me to just be like, it's Kalina, and then they just go,
so funny,
expecting me to automatically spell it for them, and yeah. I go, no, I ain't giving you that. What you gonna do with it?
That's hilarious. I love that. I think that's funny.
I just love to see the ways that they come up with, because there are some crazy fucking ways people decide to spell that. It can really range.
Oh, they wouldn't even. They wouldn't even yours try is, with mine. They'd be like, ridiculous. Well, I'm waiting for the day where I tell them my name is Sarah, and they look at my card and be like, that name's not on your card.
That's not Sarah.
Are you Sarah? Did you steal someone's credit card?
Yeah. That's giving a lot more attention than I think most people in that particular service industry are really going to give to your card.
I think so. I did get called on it once, but it wasn't by a service person. It was some guy I met at a pool hall. And he was Cambodian also. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what his name was. This is years ago when Emily and I used to go play pool all the time. And he asked me my name, and I told him my name was Sarah. He goes, oh, that's nice. What's your real name? What is my real name? He goes, no, it's not. That is not your real name. Which was dumb, because I think his name was like Tom or John or something. I'm like, really? What's your real name? But anyway, that aside, I just thought that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Something else that I wanted to touch on was The Reader.
Oh, yeah. Kirsten Potter.
Kirsten Potter. Excellent.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
She did really good. I mean, it's hard to compare with the last one because she had to do Vlad and she did the really awful accent.
Oh,
with
I forgot
Vlad.
About that. Don't make me remember.
And Roland's accent. Because this was something that you brought up in the last podcast was, you know, after so many years, hundreds of years, you would think that they would at least adapt a little bit to where they are now living or whatever. You pick up the different accents and everything. So
they speak every language. Come on.
Yeah. Roland has a British accent, but it's not that strong.
Yeah, it's
which
not
is,
strong.
Yeah, so, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the accents. The accents really are great.
Well, I love them when they're real. Yeah. I don't necessarily love an American woman making up a British man's accent. It's not the same.
Right, it definitely isn't. But she didn't try so hard.
No, she didn't.
Made it so bad.
Hers was not,
Yeah.
Vlad's was unconscionable. Unconscionable. But this was fine. This was okay. And I actually, I forget which one. One of the characters was actually called out for his fake accent. It was in passing. And somebody said, oh, so-and-so still faking his Irish accent or something. Or Scottish accent.
I don't remember.
I wish I could remember exactly. I swear it happened.
No, I think you're right. I just
so I think maybe they even like acknowledged within among themselves that it's not, you know.
Yeah.
Because it would fade, and you know the French ones were still very, very French, and you're just like, I guess they were considerably younger because they'd only been turned like the 1700s. She said. So they were like 300 years old.
She did a really good job with them with Yvette and Oh, I loved the brother's name.
Etienne.
Oh, yes.
Etienne.
I love that name. That's
so
such a,
good.
That's such a beautiful name.
I was like, yes.
So yeah, I thought that was really good. The action and that was happening when they had to go find Bastion.
Bastion.
And figure out what the fuck he's doing and why he's trying to get
to. Oh god, it was way confusing. Oh, actually that brings up another point. Again, love the book. It's super good. Not an actual plot so much. Like, you know, we've got this guy who's been trying to kill Roland. And that's basically what that's the book. Some guy's trying to kill Roland. Roland doesn't take any particular interest in trying to figure any of it out.
No.
He does nothing. All he does is fuck Sarah.
Pretty much.
That's like it.
That's all he does.
You know, they talk about their past and have sex.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. And then, like, off screen, where nobody's witnessing anything, little, like, Marcus and Minions are magically putting all the clues that we don't actually have, because there's no information, together, and they show back up at the house and have a giant meeting where they say, here's just a massive download of information.
Yeah.
Bastion isn't actually a vampire. He's an immortal. He's living in this cave we found using super secret satellites that we have.
Mm-hmm.
There's all this other information. We managed to dig up that all of his vampires, even though he tells them to only kill pedophiles, child porn people, they're actually killing whole families and they're not following his lead. He also has humans working for him. We can figure all this out. I mean, it went from you didn't know shit all for 12 hours of this damn book to a download of everything. The entire information.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go attack, he steals Sarah, and magically it's over and everything's fine.
So,
that's just a minor complaint. Because I was like, we're not progressing with any kind of plot here. We just had sex again for the umpteenth time.
True.
And then all of a sudden, problem solved. Bastion's not a bad guy. He goes over here. We're teaching him how to be a good guy. We killed all the bad vampires. They're gone. Oh, it turns out Sarah can become an immortal. Yay, she's an immortal. Ooh, they're married. Woo!
But Seth does now have to go discover one. He's got the redhead that they saved.
Is she redhead?
Her name... Oh, yeah. She's a redhead.
Oh, I did not remember that.
Her name
I can't remember.
Amy...
They call her Amy. It's a shortened version of her longer name that's really crazy.
We think it's Amarilla, but we've missed it.
I'm going to call it's not that. I suggested it was that, but I don't think it is.
Let's not call it that.
It's almost like, nope, not going to make any
it's
other
It's a very interesting name.
It's completely unlike anything I've heard.
We didn't see it written. It's harder to tell
it.
So.
We only heard, and they said it once.
They only said it once, yeah.
Once at the very end of the book.
So Seth, there's definitely a more ongoing plot that Seth is trying to uncover and everything. They're trying to figure out who led Bastion, right? Or did they know who?
Yeah, it was just Bastion. Yeah. Well, he was turned by a vampire.
But the vampire taught him that vampires were good. Or who did he learn?
Did he not learn? He not learned.
Okay.
That was not. Oh, Jesus. I'm sorry I said it. Like, he not learned. I really don't like myself right now for that one. I did. Yeah, right. The whole bottle's almost good. Oh, I can drink wine again because I'm not on antibiotics. Yay! That maybe. I don't know if it helps or not. I think it helps and that's all that matters. So that, yeah. Long story short, there isn't actually a story. That's really what I want to say. It's still good and it's still fun. It's just like a lot of our others had bigger overall plots that like people like were actively working towards. The main characters are active. It was very evident, Roland, once they got to a really safe place, because at first they thought they were safe and then they tried to move and got attacked again, and then they went to another place they thought they were safe and then they got attacked again, and then finally they got to a third really safe place. He was not going to leave Sarah. So it didn't matter.
Yeah.
He just didn't work at all to finding out what Bastion was up to or anything about it.
Yep.
He just was like, this is it. I'm done. We're going to hang out here in the basement and have sex.
Pretty much how that went down.
Sex in the basement.
And we keep referencing all those great sex. And so,
so
she wrote it very, very well. And another hard thing about doing a podcast about an audiobook is that we can't open up the book and read the excerpts. We would actually have to go back and write it down or try to remember the details that she was saying in it. But there had to have been, what, 7 different?
Oh, God. I honest to God lost track.
Yeah.
Normally, I can exactly tell you how many there are in a book, because I'm like, there was 1, 2, 3. This. But this time, it was like, nope.
There were multiple in the bedroom. There was the gym scene.
There was the kitchen before they ever had sex. Yeah. And there was the shower. The kitchen one was good. Yeah.
The kitchen one was
so good.
See, that's the one that you should have, I would have written that down and read it, and just so that,
that was so good.
To at least give you guys a snippet, just to, you know, listen to some part of it to maybe pique your interest in actually reading the book yourself.
I would just highly recommend, if you like these books for this purpose,
yes.
You should read this one, because she does a good job of it. It has one of my favorite phrases in it, which normally I only talk about words I hate, but I actually have two positive words, or I have a phrase I like that's in these books a lot. And I have a word that she used that I really love. It's one of my favorite words. So the word, I'm going to start with the word. So at one point she uses the word Stygian, which I just fucking love. It's a beautiful word. She says Stygian darkness. Stygian, like officially, the definition is of a relating to the river Styx. But it really just means like gloomy and forbidding darkness. It's usually used to describe how darkness is, which is weird because sometimes it is defined as darkness. But it's a good word. Stygian. I love it. So she uses that, which is fun. And then during the sex scenes, during one of them, and I don't remember which one, she uses one of my favorite terms that comes up, and it is cock jumped. They say that this
comes back to us in this book,
these books a lot, like a lot of these romance novels will at some point or another have the term, the phrase, the cock jump.
Yeah.
And I just fucking love that imagery. Yeah. It's so just, fun because it's so really like, fun. You instantly are like, yep, I know what that means.
Yeah.
It's like the picture of just like,
that is. Twitch, twitch. Oh my God.
Twitch.
Oh.
Twitch, twitch.
These are fun. Okay, I'm thinking about it.
Now we've got cops on the brain.
Yes. That kitchen scene, though, was that their first? Mm. That was their. I mean, they had been teasing back and forth and everything, but
he had kissed her that one other time earlier when he was trying to distract her. Like that was the first kiss. This was the first like real like back and forth kiss.
The,
yeah,
the like intense makeout scene with touching
hands
and things. It was good. I don't remember what she was wearing. If he was wearing anything.
No, he was. He had on black camel pants and a black shirt, which is 90% of what he wore the whole time. So that was easy for me to say because I know I'm going to be right.
And this was after Sarah found out that he was then.
Yes, yes. There was no relationship. I mean, they were kind of like obviously grooving on each other. Mm-hmm. And like she was thinking he was real hot. But there was nothing before she found out he was a vampire. So there was no like big giant betrayal or anything like that. He was always like, it happened pretty quick. Like as soon as they were trying to leave her house, they got attacked by vampires. Yep. And she was like, they're drinking each other's, they're all vampires. Yep. Everyone has fangs.
Yep. Well, and she sees him just like ripping somebody apart.
Yeah. And they're all like supernaturally fast. Yes. And things are like flying. Yeah. And she's like, what the fuck is happening?
She gets in her little car and then takes off.
She got in Marcus's car.
And then they had to take her car. That's right. Yeah, she got in Marcus's Prius.
And it got fucking destroyed.
Driven a Prius and that. They go to like 0-60 in 2 minutes. They're the slowest fucking car.
It was a Prius, wasn't it?
It was a Prius.
Yeah, I wasn't buying that for him either. And I was like, I'm sorry. He owns a fucking Range Rover or a Jeep.
Or yeah, that's what I think. He seemed like the rugged type. Marcus was.
They're living in the back country of North Carolina. They're not in cities.
Oh, that's
they
so
own
funny.
Range Rovers or Jeeps. There's no fucking way that dude's driving around a Prius.
Oh man, that was really funny.
I think it's another piece of maybe the author's like environmental. Like,
oh yeah, maybe.
I think she's got a definite agenda that sleeps into this book, which is fine. That's what authors do.
It's all good.
It goes along with her organic vegetables and no eating meat.
I'm not dogging on a Toyota. I drive a Toyota and I fucking love them. They're like the best cars to me.
I'm not dogging on Priuses either.
Priuses don't go as quickly as she was like. It was like
she floored the goddamn car.
Yeah. And was like, I mean, I believe that it got completely destroyed because it is just
a vampire land.
You know? Yes, it was then that she discovered when they took her back to Marcus's house. Or no, it was Roland's house.
They went to Roland's house. That's the one that burned down.
And then that's the one when she finally figured out, or when they told her what they were. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they had to tell her because she thought they were vampires. And yeah. He had to explain that they weren't vampires, that there's a difference and one is good and one is bad.
And he was afraid that she was going to run away.
Pretty immediately accepting of it.
She was hesitant at first, but yeah, I mean, within the next...
Yeah, I mean, she was scared when she saw Fangs and they were attacking each other and she was near him. I'd have been scared too. That sounds scary. She ran away. I think that's wise choices that she made. Oh,
for sure.
Yeah. I do think there was a point where she was running where she, like, no longer could see and she kept running and I was like, yeah, maybe you stop.
She ran into... Well, she...
She fell down she a did. Hill. She ran into a tree.
She ran into
like, multiple trees. And I was like, all right, you no longer can see... The flight has taken you too far. You have to slow down now. I mean, it was too late. Roland caught her. She was done. Anyway, she also had been in a car accident. So I guess because a vampire landed on the car. Yeah. I don't know if I said that before. But it was a really crazy scene.
It was. She described it pretty well, though. I thought that was...
Right? I was terrified. Really into it. I was like, shit! Yes!
Go, Prius, go! Yes, I totally was. And I was like, oh yeah, that Prius got fucking destroyed.
Fucking dude lands on the hood of the car. You're done. So
I know you... So you had your thing about Sarah. Here's my thing about Sarah. Because like you said, we're not always going to like our characters 100%,
no,
right?
No, they have to have flaws.
Yeah. So she finds out, obviously, that he is an immortal. There's a difference between immortals and vampires and all of that stuff. She finds out that he is a healer. He knows how to heal. And he actually healed her of some of her stuff. So she is completely like... Once she figures out that he can do it and that he actually takes in with the markings and the pain and stuff momentarily.
Yeah. He like absorbs the injury and heals it in himself.
Yeah.
It's not so much like, yeah, he like transfers the injury to him, heals and it's gone, basically.
Sort of like John Coffey from The Green Mile. He absorbs it into himself and then it just dissipates.
There was some until the very end. Was somewhere else too.
I think a lot of them, I think there are.
That was like in a TV show or a movie I recently saw. Some character could do that. But anyway, yeah.
I think Rogue and Wolverine did it in one of the X-Men or something. I don't remember, but...
Oh, right. She had to steal his healing power so she could heal herself when he stabbed her.
Because he's got the rejuvenation of... So anyway, so she gets really bent out of shape when he's trying to
Jesus,
help
balls.
Her.
That was too
and
much.
And I couldn't tell. Just like, just fucking let him heal you. He's gonna be okay. And she was just adamant about, no, were you just healing me just now? Were you just... touching my back just so that you can heal my broken bones?
Yeah, it sounded pretty much like her spine was broken. She didn't know it and was walking around.
Yeah.
But it sounded bad. And she's like, I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to be the cause of any pain to you. And I'm like, that's taking it to a level that I think is extreme.
I was very annoyed by that.
I understand. Like, that's being too selfless. You don't want to cause other humans pain. I don't want to cause people pain. I don't want to be annoying to people. I find it like, I go out of my way to be like, how can I be the least irritating person you'll ever come across in your life? It's a goal of mine. But at some point, he has this ability. He's told you, okay, he did it wrong the very first time because he tried to heal her while he was still weak. And Marcus kept telling him, stop it. You know that that is not, you aren't going to be able to fix yourself. Yeah. You're too weak. You'll take on her injuries and you'll be injured.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't do it. And he didn't listen to Marcus because he's a stubborn bitch.
Yes.
I love him, but he's a stubborn asshole. Well, they both are stubborn. It's they're both incredibly stubborn. Mm-hmm. So they fit well together.
Yeah.
So he did it wrong and she saw him get injured because he, you know, he like took a cut from her head and then his head split open and bled, which would be terrifying to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're just looking at a person who put their hand on your face and then their face fucking splits open and bleeds.
Blood.
All right, I'm going to be nervous about this situation and I don't want you to do it. But once it's explained that all he needs to do is be healthy first.
Yes.
And then healing your cuts and bruises isn't going to kill him.
Right.
Or really even hurt him all that much.
No.
She needed to let him do it because she sounded fucking beat
up. She was beat up. And the way, and Marcus put it really nicely.
Yes.
I don't even remember what he fucking said. He pretty much said,
rejecting his gift is rejecting him.
There you go. See, I'm so glad you have a memory.
Also, I just finished it today. I really do. I put it off to the very last minute. I listened to these books right before we record.
I think that's probably a better idea because in every single one of our podcasts, I have said, I forget. I forgot. I forget what happens. Tell me what happens because I do. I read them instantly when I get home and then I, 2 weeks later, I have forgotten what the fucking story is about. But yes, and I love the way that he put that. I love that he had explained it to her and she was just like, oh, okay, I get it. Okay, because at that point, Roland's just like, he's like throwing his hands up and it's like, I just gotta get away from you right now because you're not letting me help you and I need to fucking help you because you're broken. You've got broken ribs, broken spine. You're just, everything on you is broken. You're only 5'1" and like 97 pounds. Let me fucking help you.
Yeah, yeah. They constantly are describing her as being that tall and that fucking light. Yeah. Although they also say she's very muscly, so I'm going to say she's most likely more than 95 pounds.
Yeah, if she's
if you're real muscly, that's, anyway. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I was maybe slightly jealous.
Totally jealous.
I was like, aw, I'm not 95 pounds. I weigh more than that.
I really don't want you ever to be, I mean, unless you are going to be muscly, 95 pounds. But you'd have to be like 4'8 and 98 muscly. Okay.
No, I'm never. Anyway. It's a moot point. That's yeah, just, forget that about ship it. Is fucking done. Yeah, not going to be 95 points. It's fine. Don't worry. I'm drinking a bottle of wine to myself. We're not getting there.
Okay. Okay.
But yes. Yeah, no, she needed to get over that like issue a lot sooner, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
That was a little bit irritating. And even then, even after she let him heal her that one time, and then later in the book when he's training her, she wants him to come at her full strength, full speed, mm-hmm. full intensity, yeah. like really try with all of his immortal speed and strength. And he's like, I don't really want to do that. It's hard for me because all I want to do is protect you. I don't want to hurt you in any way.
Yeah.
But if I do it, you have to let me heal you. And mm-hmm. she got all uppity again and was like, mm. And I was like, if you want him to beat the fuck out of you so you can train, you have to let him heal you because that's insane otherwise.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Now that's just fucking sadism or some masochism.
Yeah. Because it's one thing for her to be really good at a gunshot, which she was.
Apparently. Yes, she really could shoot good at really shooting well. Guns.
But if they're coming at you, I mean, I get the one-on-one training and training with someone that can actually fight, but you don't want to die during your training.
No.
It's just like...
he's never going to be able to...
what's going to happen now?
Like he's going to break your arm and then just let it take 7 to 8 weeks to heal? Well, that's not helpful to your training. You're not going to train better if your arm's fucking broken because mm-hmm. he actually gave you 100% and you, you know, missed and he broke your arm. Mm-hmm. You have to let him fix you. Like, just stop making it an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, he did almost die at the end when he was fixing her brain hemorrhage.
That is true.
Because she had a head.
She had a severe head injury. She had a concussion. Her pupils were more all different sizes. More than a concussion, sizes, though.
Like, she had brain like, swelling and oh, like, yeah, a broken did. Skull.
That's right. Yeah, and he
blood
did.
Blood coming out of her ears. I was like, oh, and she had to stop him because he was almost dead.
Yeah, he was almost dead from that.
It was bad.
That was when she was kidnapped from Bastion, and even Bastion was like, fuck, you weren't supposed to get hurt.
But no, that's where you know Bastion was actually not as bad as maybe because he tried to kill Roland for like centuries, but it's okay. He's not really bad.
It's all right.
It's glossed over real fast. But he only kidnaps her for the span of like 5 minutes. So it's not, she's not in danger. That's why I say there's not really any plot. Because even when like something that should be plot happens, it is the shortest lived plot line. Like he kidnaps her from the house when the immortals have come to kill Bastion. He's actually gone to the house to kidnap Sarah. And he brings her immediately back to his lair where all the immortals already are trying to get Bastion. And they see him. And Roland chases him down, takes Sarah away, beats the fuck out of Bastion, and then heals Sarah. In like 2 minutes. And I was like, well, she was kidnapped for all of 2 minutes.
Pretty much how
pretty much she just got brought to the battle by the enemy.
And she hurt herself.
She did. she shot Bastion in the thighs and then stabbed him in the butt.
Oh, she stabbed him in the butt.
She first shot him.
Really?
She shot him in both hamstrings because he picked her up and put her over his shoulder. Mm-hmm. And so she got her gun and shot him in the hamstrings, which caused him to drop her. And she lost her gun, but then he picked her back up and started running again, and she grabbed her knife and stabbed him in the ass, which caused him to throw her against a wall and break her head.
And break her head.
Oh, it was, oh God, it was funny.
That was pretty
the
funny.
The whole time he's like, you stabbed me in the ass.
Did you really just stab me in the ass?
I was like, if you had access to stab him in the ass, you could have stabbed him in his fucking spine.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that would be, the ass is a very fleshy piece. Mm-hmm. He's still going to be able to run. The spine at least would have done more significant damage. He would have had to rejuvenate himself before he could move again. So yep. I was like, you picked the wrong target, lady.
In the most cushiony part of the body that you
also about. Just the funniest part. Yeah. Now we had, that got brought up a lot.
It did.
So she stabbed him in the ass.
That's pretty funny. Because even Roland was like, you stabbed him in the ass.
And she's like, I don't remember. She had a fucking concussion at that point, so she didn't know what had happened. Oh, we didn't talk about Nietzsche yet.
I was just going to bring him up.
Oh, we love Nietzsche.
Say, one of my favorite. I think just the favorite part of this book is Roland's cat named Nietzsche.
Nietzsche.
Who Seth, when first saw him again after a long time, he was like, this isn't the original Nietzsche, is it?
So, it turns out maybe Nietzsche's immortal.
Definitely.
Unintentionally. Roland's not a crazy ass who tried to turn his cat into an immortal. He came home from a fight one night and was really injured and didn't have the ability to drink blood and heal himself before he passed out. So he just passed out and he found Nietzsche licking his wounds when he woke up. And so the cat must have got enough of the virus to become apparently a mortal cat.
Yep.
But not a crazy vampire cat.
No.
He's not crazy. He's just apparently going to live forever. Yep. So that's super cute and I love it.
He's just so sweet. So sweet. And all of these big, burly, buffy men love this cat. They just think he's the cutest thing.
He just hangs out with them and they pet him and it's so cute.
It is really cute.
And it kind of gives you the whole, all the other immortals are always ragging on Roland for being such a loner. He, apparently it's general procedure to have a second.
Yes.
So every immortal has a human second who is there to take care of them when they're sleeping during the day, to bring them blood, to clean up things, to prevent discovery.
To cover their tracks.
Yeah, because, the governments do not know that immortals and vampires exist, so they're still trying to stay quiet and under the radar, and they need humans to do that because it's really hard when you can't go outside in the sun to accomplish shit. So it's standard procedure that all immortals have a second who is a human, and Roland has refused it for 9 centuries because he doesn't want that, and he's a real ornery bastard about things. So everyone calls him, he's antisocial and he has no friends and all of this shit. And it turns out that he has this cat. And I think it just is so nice because even though, yes, cats are, loners who can pretty much take care of themselves.
Yep.
It still shows that he has affection and a connection with a living being that he loves. And he saved him from the fire.
Yep.
Because he could have burned up in the fire, but he didn't. So cute.
Yeah. So, is it time to do our kiss and tells? Kiss and tells.
Music.
Ding.
Someday.
Someday.
We'll have musical interludes and everything will
It'll be
wonderful.
Great.
The moment we don't have those.
So, our first kiss and tell is going to be, it's not that juicy. This one's going to be more fun than anything else. I think it's just going to be us telling you, the listeners, if we had a choice of which supernatural being we could be and choose to be, whether immortal or not, because we all know Kalina hates immortality, which one we would choose. So, do you want to go first? Do you not know? Because I totally fucking know.
If you know, you should go first. I'm less 100% sure, so.
So, I would want to be a witch of some sort. I want the ability to fly. So, I mean, if anything, spells and all that kind of stuff, that's cool. I think that's really neat. I don't need to be super strong or super sexy or bloodthirsty or anything like that. I definitely don't want to transform into any type of animal. I think that would be not fun. But I do, oh my God, this is so funny. Sarah from...
The other Sarah.
No, we're going to go see it on Monday.
Oh, The Craft.
The Craft! Sarah is supposed to be... Like her. that character, Sarah.
Yes,
so a witch like that.
Yes,
or
yes,
even
yes.
A Harry Potter witch that lives in the muggle world. Something where I've got the power to do magic and potions and things like that. I don't really want a broom to fly.
No, you just want to fly.
I want flight.
Ooh, what would I be? That's a hard call. I don't have an easy answer. I fucking hate the idea of immortality. I really do. And I do not understand its general, like, appeal to most people. Mm-hmm. I feel that without knowing that life is finite, it would be too easy to not live life.
Fullest or live
just,
life.
Just live yeah. life. If it was just endless, what's the fucking point? I don't get the point of it. I don't get the point of endless life. And I have this argument all the fucking time with my brother. He's so hell-bent on humans eventually crossing that threshold into being almost computer, like being able to like transition into either like tech bodies, like so that you don't have to, like if your body doesn't wear out and basically becoming
cyborg
and mm-hmm. or if not cyborg, just putting your consciousness into computers.
Like he that thinks movie that's with Johnny
coming.
Depp.
Yeah. He thinks that's coming. And I just like can't think of anything sadder than that. Because
terrible.
It sounds fucking awful.
Yeah, that does not sound right.
Does not sound good to me. There's just so meh, but it's in so much of the stuff I read. It's in most of the fucking shows I watch, mm-hmm. where it's like somebody's striving for a mentality and it always ends up backfiring on them. And I'm just like, no thanks. So I know I don't want any of the things that come with that. Because I'm just like, no. I want to just live and then pass on. And like, that's it. It's finite. And you get what you get out of it and you put into it. And then that's it. That's all you have. Magic's a pretty good one. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty strong contender. I do like this shape-shifting, though, too. Mm-hmm. Like, those dragons are some of my favorite
things. Oh, yeah. Those are pretty cool.
They're pretty awesome. I don't know that that'd be all that useful in real life, though.
Dragons, probably not.
Not dragons so much. Maybe if I could, like, shape-shift into a cat. I would probably really enjoy my life a lot if I could be a cat.
Yeah.
For a certain portion of it. Like, I wouldn't mind being stronger and faster. Whatever that entails, yeah. I kind of think I'd enjoy that. Defending the innocent and fighting for justice. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be a superhero, though. That sounds like a superhero.
It
that's
totally
not
did.
Up my alley.
Super Kalina.
No. I don't know. So I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think it'd be something along the lines of that. Anyway, so sidetracked. We're so
yeah,
sidetracked.
Sorry.
Oh, it's not your fault.
What's the,
both of our fault.
What's the next one? Do we have a next one?
Brave. Our next kiss and tell is we were going to discuss, because Sarah really was. So at the very, very beginning of this book, Sarah is out digging a garden in her yard. She lives in a house in the woods, but she's turning one section of her property into a veggie garden. She says veggie every time she says it, which also kind of I find grating and irritating. Because I'm like, oh, you mean a vegetable garden? Because we're not fucking 12. Sorry. And so she gets kind of like run over, like Roland.
She gets knocked
The vampires that are chasing him, he's in this battle for his life, and they basically like run over her, and she doesn't know what's happened. She thinks maybe a bear. Real funny.
Yeah.
But she like creeps off into the woods and sees them stake him to the ground and then just leave the two guys to guard him. The others retreat and they just say, wait until he, you know, the sun comes up and he burns to death. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, that's awful. And then she takes her shovel and hits the two guys in the head and rescues Roland. Mm-hmm. And so the other question we were going to talk about is like, do you think that you're brave enough? Like, what would you do? Like, do you think that's in you? Or is that the kind of situation where you'd be like, sorry, dude. This doesn't hurt you. What do you think?
In my situation now, I think with being married and having kids, I think I'd have turned the other way. I think I would have tried to hide. And
I mean,
and
she did
not
get, like, knocked to the ground yeah. by crazy things that she couldn't understand.
Right, you know. And I'm not curious enough, and you are not wrong when you say I am scared of everything. I am terrified of everything.
We just ran across the street earlier, and she acted like literally the car was going to run us down. It was, like, two blocks away.
It was so close. The headlights were on us. Oh, my heart's beating just thinking about it.
Yeah. No, she gets real scared.
Okay, so
streets are real hard for her. For Salem.
Oh, man, that's a I think in my situation now, with my kids, even if I wasn't married, I have kids. I wouldn't have done it. I honestly think that I would have turned the other way. Mm-hmm. I probably would have went home and called the cops. mm-hmm. and like hid under the bed and like mm-hmm. sheltered well, my and kids from everything.
Bad, that is not a bad reaction. Calling the cops is actually probably what more people need to do in these books. We mentioned, what was it, 2-3 books ago where Sarah got like fucking mugged and almost killed at night? You call the goddamn cops. You tell them that someone tried to kill you. You don't just go, well, that happened, and right. move on with your life. But anyway, I think, on the other hand, but I think, and it's really hard to say, it could easily go either way, but I kind of think I maybe would hit them with the shovel. I have a tendency to attack things that scare me. Not things that give me anxiety, like grocery stores. Those I don't attack because I hate them and they cause me anxiety. But if it's an issue of something like intimidating or scaring me in a place that isn't supposed to be, I get aggressive. So at one of my jobs, it's in not the best area of town, and sometimes we get some of the less desirable, unfortunately, less stable humans of Denver coming into the shop and being weird mm-hmm. or being aggressive at us and like getting in our faces yeah. about things. Yeah. And it is up to us to protect not only the store, but our patrons get uncomfortable. Most of them are foreign or visitors. Most of them are travel. Mm-hmm. What's
out of towners?
What's the other tourists? An A. Like, I don't know that word. Most of them are tourists and are uncomfortable, especially if they aren't from big cities. Right. They never know if, I mean, Denver's not a big city, really. It's a medium city, but mm-hmm. they still, like, don't like seeing homeless people or, you know, right. people who are unstable coming in and, like, being aggressive at them. And I have in the past, when that's happened, instead of backing away from the situation, yeah. I get really, like, in their face and aggressive about it. So I think there's a chance, especially because Sarah had her shovel.
Yeah.
And the guys weren't paying any attention to her, and she snuck up on them, that in that position, I could just, out of the blue, hit them with my shovel like she did, and then stand there going, oh shit, what the fuck did I just do? Like, I could see myself instantly regretting all the choices I had made and being like, oh, no, now I'm in this shit, and I didn't mean to be in this shit. Because she has to, like, pull fucking stakes out of the ground and, like, carry a 200-pound, 6'5" man back mm-hmm. to her house, which mm-hmm. is real hard, even mm-hmm. if you're not as small as she was described as being. But I'd like to think that I'd be brave in that situation. And I have enough past moments where I think I could prove. Mm-hmm. I once punched a mirror because it scared me.
Did you break it?
No. I hurt my hand. I can totally. Oh my god. Oh god. I don't think I've ever told anyone this story. Okay, so it's an ex. At some point, my ex hung a mirror in his bathroom, like a full head to toe, full length
mirror
behind the door. And I'd been over a lot. I'd been over numerous times mm-hmm. and the mirror was not there, and I knew my way around his house and his bathroom and the bedroom. And then it was like one evening, and you know, I got up in the middle of the night to go use the bathroom. I shut the door and flipped the light on, and all of a sudden there was a naked person looking at me. And I punched her, because how dare she be anywhere around me? And then it was me.
You pushed yourself.
I pushed myself, and I screamed, and I punched, and I, thank God I didn't break it. I'd have felt so fucking bad if I'd broken it. But it hurt real bad. I like, jumped out of bed and was like, what are you doing? And I was like, sorry, there's a mirror in here. I thought there was a person, and she was looking at me. So, when scared, I can apparently lash out at things.
Yeah.
Even if they are me.
I love that. I get that. I guess it's all situational and how, I mean, fight or flight, man. You just gotta do what you gotta do.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Yep. You know, if I'm protect, like
if your boys are there, I think you'd hit.
Oh, them. I definitely, that's what I was just gonna say. If I had somebody to protect, definitely, I'm always on guard. That's the bad thing about, like, or at least for me, my personal how I am with Dan and with my kids and my brother and my sisters and stuff. When I'm around my mom and my sisters, I'm very protective. Not that I don't think they can take care of themselves, but I get very protective. So if they were with me and my kids were with me, just my boys, I think definitely I'd hold up that shovel. I'd probably go after them. Or I would try to run as fast as I could with them in my hands. Whatever I could do. But if it was like me and my brother or Dan or something, someone of that type, I completely let my guard down when I am around them. Mm-hmm. Both of them especially. And I shouldn't. I really, really shouldn't.
But they're also supposed to protect you.
They're my...
I mean, you kind of have... Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like... I see them as my protectors, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, there are times where I guess conscious enough to think, okay, I need to be on guard because... We are both at this bar. We both need to see what's happening over there. And, you know, because if there's a fight breaking out or something, I need to be able to protect my husband at the same time. But most of the time, it's like, nope, I'm going to hide behind this motherfucker because he's going to protect me. So I guess it's situational.
It's situational. And also, that's not a total problem because it's good to sometimes be able to be confident and comfortable enough to let your guard down. Mm-hmm. To be like, this is... You know, cause especially because you do suffer from quite a few phobias. Mm-hmm. Like, things can be extra scary to you. Like, being with Dan, knowing, like, you don't have to worry. You don't get that out of a lot of time. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a lot of worries otherwise. Mm-hmm. So that's good for you. That's healthy to be like, I'm not going to worry right now. Because yeah. Dan won't let me walk into traffic. Which...
Would he?
Nah, Dan wouldn't. He's very observant. He is. He wouldn't let you walk into traffic.
He is.
So, yeah, so that's, I think that's good. I don't think it's, I mean, being on guard 100% of the time is hard.
It is.
So, and I don't know that I don't think I am all the time either, but I think that when something starts to scare me, I tend, and I think it, actually, I can pinpoint it to growing up with my brother. Mm. We had a tendency to try to hide behind corners and jump out at each other our whole childhood. Mm-hmm. And at some point along that process, I decided, or my body decided, whatever, my reactions decided that instead of just screaming and being scared, I was going to start swinging. When faced with scary, immediate trauma, I would hit. And so eventually the game became less fun for him because I would just fucking swing. Punch like at him and be like, you jumped out at me, this mm-hmm. is what you happened. So now that's my natural response to scared is the punch shit.
He trained you.
Yeah,
trained you
well. Now he did. He didn't know he was doing it at the time, but that's what it is now. You scare me and I fucking punch you.
That's awesome.
Even if you're just a mirror.
I love that story. That's so awesome.
Oh, it was decidedly wasn't awesome when it happened.
That's so great.
Yeah.
So I think what we're going to wrap up with a few things. One of the last things we're going to do is introduce another thing that we are going to do that we feel it's going to be super fun.
I'm so
and
excited.
Maybe later on we can kind of go back and do this for the rest of the books. And maybe that would be something. Right now I don't think we can remember all of the books we've read.
Sure, we've only read 5.
See, we don't remember. So... So we are going to introduce a skill system.
We want to rate our books, mm-hmm. and we're going to give them a dirty pleasure rating.
Dirty pleasures.
Yeah, musical interlude. So from 1 to 10 on the dirty pleasure rating, what did you think of this book?
So, 1 being the most tame.
Yeah, most tame, two. Least excited. Like, don't, we really don't recommend it.
Like, maybe.
Like
was,
don't read it.
Yeah.
That if it's was, a 1, don't read it.
That was like your grandmother kissing you on the cheek type of a 1.
Oh,
yeah. to 10, which is the best.
Mind shattering.
You're just getting.
Toe curling yes. orgasms.
Plowed out by the best sex in the world. So for this one, in comparison to the ones that we've already read, definitely my favorite of all.
Yeah.
My favorite of all. I wasn't completely annoyed by any character.
No, no, no.
Like
no,
I was with
no,
Vlad.
No. Minor passing irritations, but not
yeah,
full-blown annoyances.
Just minor things. I honestly want to give this one like an 8 or 9 even. Yeah, it was that good. I mean, like, when you told me about it and you're like, I'm going to listen to it the way in an airplane. I was like, no, no. It was like a slow, I could see myself slow motion knowing you. And I was just like, don't do it. Because this was, I'm going to bed early, honey. I don't need you to join me for a little bit. That is my.
Give me some time.
8.9. Or that was me sneaking away and... You know, doing my thing. So yeah, it was a satisfying, vibrating 8.9.
Nice.
Vibrating 8.9.
Vibrating 8.9. I love it. All right. I think, like, I really did like this book. I have a weird personal attachment to the Dragon book. Mm-hmm. That whole series is still my favorite. I still would place, I think, that first Dragon book over this one a little bit. I think mostly the only big ding I have on this book is its plot. Like, I was just a little bit lacking. I don't know. I'm a very confusing person because I hated the second Lord of the Underworld book because it was like all plot and no sex. Yeah, and I was like driven crazy by it. I'm not a very consistent human being, and you're just going to have to put up with it. You're going to find a lot of inconsistencies, and this is going to be one of them. So I'm only going to ding it a little bit. And instead of a like 8.99 like you gave it, I think I'll give it an 8. Because it was still one of the better ones that we have read date. It was definitely engaging. Fucking steamy as fuck sex scenes that I definitely flagged all of them so I can go back and listen to them again when I'm not at work. Also, side note, don't listen to these books at work.
Not on the airplane, not at work.
It's what I do. And don't tell any of my coworkers. They don't know that's what I listen to. If they ask, I always tell them much more tame things. Or I'm like, I'm listening to Charles Dickens.
It's intriguing.
Excuse me, while Bleak House is a fantastic novel. It really is. Bleak House is a good novel. But I maybe lie a little bit because they don't need to know what I'm listening to. But it is, there's moments where you just like stop mid typing to be like, what?
But do they? This is what we're doing this for.
They do not need to know that. Okay. I listen to it at work. I'm going to stand by that.
At work. Okay, I get it.
I don't want to hide these books. And I've actually talked about them with certain coworkers and this podcast that we are doing. So I'm not ashamed of them. But I do still think there may be a line about listening to them at work that I'm consistently crossing. And I'm going to just not tell that I do that.
I am agreeing with you there. Definitely.
Because there are moments that are so distracting that there's no way I'm getting work done. Because I'm like, my fingers are like stopped midair. And I'm just like...
I would have to say, if you have a vivid imagination, which I do, also a bad thing when you're driving.
Oh, yeah.
Not a good thing to listen to driving.
Especially in the summer when your windows are rolled down and you keep stopping in residential neighborhoods next to other cars. I have frequently found myself quietly turning the volume down as a man stared at me because I was listening to...
Yes!
Fucking erotica in my car. And I was like, what? Shut your face. Don't listen over here. If you understood this, you'd probably be better.
Yeah, you would be staring at me. Would you like for me to turn it up so you can have some tips?
So I'm going to give it toe-curling 8. Because I think it was real sexy. It's a good read. It's a fast read. It's engaging.
It is. Yeah.
It's a good dirty pleasure book. Yeah. And I foresee us continuing this series in the future. Not near future, but definitely at some point. Because I fucking want to know about these guys.
Yeah, me too. I want to know about Seth.
And desperately interested.
Yes, I'm definitely interested in Seth.
Say that once to read about Seth.
He's going to turn out to be something that's like...
I'm going to call it now, guys. And if this happens, I'm going to be pissed. These guys had better not turn out to be aliens.
Yeah, she did mention it very briefly.
If it happens, we're going to be drastically unhappy.
It's going
to
be over.
Just side note, like, that can't be. She has got to figure something else out. They can't be fucking aliens. I won't handle it. I don't want aliens in my supernatural romance novels.
I don't either.
I don't want freaky. Sci-fi. I want freaky supernatural beings, not fucking Mulder and Scully. Yeah. I love Mulder and Scully, but they don't belong here. Anyway. Okay. We're moving on. We're going to wrap this up and tell you the next book we're going to read, which I think it's time. I know we haven't done it yet, but one of the big names in the genre is J.R. Ward, also known as Nora Roberts, for the more, like, less supernatural, more traditional romances. We're going to read Dark Lover by J.R. Ward, and we'll be doing the audiobook. It's narrated by Jim Frangione. I'm guessing as that name. I haven't heard him say it yet, so if that's not his name, I apologize. Jim Frangione.
Dark Lover, we welcome you to read the books and join us on our next podcast and to go to all of our wonderful social media sites. So we are on Gmail at shdirtybooks.com. Our Twitter handle is at shdirtybooks.com and our Facebook is the same, shdirtybooks.com. And all of our sh has 3 H's. Just remember that. So S-H-H-H. Dirty books.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you and have a pleasant...
Well, it's always evening and nighttime for us when we do this recording. So have a good rest of your day, be it night or morning or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That you're enjoying right now. Yeah. Enjoy. I'm Saylet.
I'm Kalina.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, yeah, hey, it's Saylet again. I just wanted to come back and let you know that I totally lied to you guys, and all of our social media stuff that I just put on this last podcast is not, it's not true. So let me give them to you again so you can follow correctly. Our email address is shdirtybooks@gmail.com, and our Twitter handle is shdirtybooks, and our Facebook is also shdirtybooks, and all of the sh has 3 H's. So yeah, I just wanted to apologize for that and let you guys know. We'll catch you later.
Yeah, you've been listening to Reading Dirty Books with Kalina and Saylet. Be sure to tune into the next episode. Some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format that allows you to give a rating, please do that for them.
We'd like to thank Jim Townsend for that sexy and wonderful introduction.